I'd like to convene the Conference Committee on Senate File 1528, affectionately known as the Digital Learning Bill. Rep. Myra and I worked on this throughout the interim and then brought it to our individual bodies. And what you have before you is the side-by-side. And you'll notice that we each kind of went a different way in this bill. But on the other hand, there's some similarities. And I think there's a lot of things that can fit very nicely together in both the House and Senate bill. So with that, I'd like to ask Ms. Butler if members were on page R1. I want to make sure all the members have a side-by-side. And Ms. Butler, if you could start on page R1 and explain the Senate provision, and then we will turn it over to Ms. Larson to explain the House provision.
Sounds good, Madam Chair. On R1, it's actually Section 3 of the Senate file, and in that section, the Senate has strongly encourages all Minnesota students to take at least one online learning course before graduating high school.
And Ms. Larson, would you like to explain the House language on page R1?
Madam Chair, members, Section 1 in the House bill has a provision that would require high school students, and this would be students entering ninth grade in the 2013-2014 school year and later, to successfully complete at least one course credit that would include digital learning. It also allows, where it's appropriate, for a school district to comply with this proposal by adopting a comparable locally established alternative plan that would accommodate either students with disabilities or English language learners who had been enrolled in school for 3 or fewer years. Madam Chair, members, Section 2 in the House, there is no comparable provision in the Senate, has to do with technology strategies for teacher candidates. It would direct all colleges and universities with an approved teacher preparation program to include in that program the knowledge and skills that the teacher candidates need to deliver digital and blended learning and curriculum and to engage students with technology. This particular provision would apply to teacher candidates entering a teacher preparation program after June 30th of 2014.
Thank you. Ms. Larson, I just want to let the committee know kind of the intent here today is we'll go through section by section, and I want to make sure that we're all on the same page, so to speak, so we know exactly what is in each bill. And then if you have any questions about a particular section, we'll take those questions. But again, the intent is really not at this point to debate the issues. They're very similar, but there's also some differences. But what we do want to make sure is we all understand exactly what each bill says. And so those I'd like you to confine your questions, if you have any, about a particular section, to make sure that you have questions about either bill. So, Ms. Larson, please continue. I think you're on Section 3, and members are on page R2.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Section 3 in the House bill, for which there is no comparable Senate provision, has to do with staff development activities. And specifically, the list of staff development activities is amended to say that in circumstances where the activity relates to teacher content, knowledge, and instructional skills, that particular activity would accommodate the delivery of digital and blended learning and curriculum and also engage students with technology. This is effective immediately. Section 4, which corresponds to Section 3, and again for which there is no Senate provision, it appears on R3, Madam Chair, has to do with staff development outcomes, and specifically that the staff development plan includes goals that, among other things, apply to effectively delivering digital and blended learning and curriculum and engaging students with technology. This is also effective in the Section 5, again on R3, and again there is no comparable Senate provision, amends the definition of a number of concepts that appear in the current law on online learning. The first change is a definition of digital learning that states that it is learning facilitated by technology that offers students an element of control over the time, place, path, or pace of their learning. A second definition change has to do with the definition of blended learning. This is a new definition. It says that the term blended learning means digital learning that occurs in one of two circumstances. The first, a student learns part-time in a supervised physical setting and part-time through digital delivery of instruction. Or the alternative, a student learns in a supervised physical setting where technology is used as a primary method to deliver instruction. The definition of online learning has been changed to say that it means a form of digital learning delivered by an approved online learning provider. And finally, the last change, aside from technical changes, has to do with the definition of online learning provider. And now there is a reference to the fact that the provider would be approved by the department to provide online learning courses. These changes are effective immediately, and they appear on R3 and R4 of the revisor's side-by-side document. Section 6.
Ms. Larson?
Yes.
I have a question on Section 5 that you just went through. And the question has to do with the online learning definition, which I believe is in lines 4.23 to 4.26. And in order to be an online learning provider, they must be approved by the department to provide online learning courses. And what I'd like to know is, would the language that you just read in Section 5, would that preclude a school district from offering an online course to its students without being an approved online provider? In other words, I'm thinking it's possible that a school district might want to offer an online course. And so my question would be, would this preclude them from doing that, or would they have to then be registered as a full online provider? Ms. Representative Myra?
Madam Chair, actually, if a school were to deliver a course digitally, it would fall under the category of digital learning as opposed to online. Online is very specific that it is only those courses that would be approved by the Department of Education. So that is, we're changing the definitions here. You know, in the past, we've always thought if it's online or a computer is involved or technology involved, it's online. We're saying here the online courses are those that are approved. They're done by an approved approved by the Department of Education.
So,
these actually, what you're talking about, would go under the category of digital learning.
So even though it's the same course, it's something that's totally online.
Yes.
It would be considered a digital course if it's
right.
provided through the school district to its enrolled students.
Right.
However, that same course would be considered an online course if it were provided through an online school or online provider. Am I catching that distinction?
You are doing it, yes.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe statutorily we use the phrase online learning course, online learning provider, most importantly for funding mechanisms. If a student is already enrolled in a school, they are receiving funding for that school, and they can take the course any way the school wants to offer it. When we use online learning statutorily, it is as a way to track a funding stream so that revenue can be generated from students not enrolled in that school.
Thank you for clarifying. I just wanted to make sure that the language would not prevent a school district that chose to offer an online course from doing so. And that was the intent.
Yeah, Senator, I do believe that the language, as we have it here listed, would prevent a school from offering an online learning course to students not enrolled in their district and then generating state revenue for it. And I think that's appropriate because they should only generate state revenue if they are indeed department approved.
Except they generate revenue because they are a student in the school that's offering the online course. because they're enrolled in that school district.
And Senator, maybe I misspoke, but to just point of clarification, I believe I said for students not enrolled in the school to generate the revenue.
Thank you. Any other questions on that? Yes, Senator Olson.
Do these definitions have precedent in some other state or whatever? You redefined, you know, digital, online, and blended. Have you just created them here, or is there a model somewhere else that you were following?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, yes, we followed a model that was provided by Digital Learning Now. It's a national nonprofit organization that gives input on online learning, digital learning.
Thank you.
Any further questions on Section 5, members? Okay. Ms. Larson, I believe members were on the bottom of page R4, starting Section 6. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, Section 6 at the bottom of R4 and continue on to R5 contains technical changes to reflect the changes that are being proposed elsewhere in this bill.
And Ms. Larson, are these technical changes, I think they might be directly attributed to the new definitions and the mandate that we discussed in previous sections? Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Ms. Larson, all right, thank you. Let's see, members, we're on, did you want to talk about page R5? It's just changing the words online to digital.
Let's proceed.
Yep. Okay. Okay. And Ms. Larson?
Madam Chair, members, on R6 of the revisor side-by-side document, Section 7, Paragraph A establishes a process by which the department would review and approve or disapprove online learning providers within 90 calendar days of receiving providers' application. There is a direction that the commissioner review all approved providers on a cyclical 3-year basis, and that approved providers annually submit 3 different things: program data, and then confirm statements of written assurances for, and provide program updates that would include a current course list of commissioner. There is an exemption from the requirement for a written assurance, and that is other than a digital learning provider offering digital learning to its enrolled students. And this is a topic that you discussed recently. On page R7, paragraph F, there is language that allows the department to review a complaint about an online learning provider. And if the department determines that the online learning provider violated a law or rule, the department has 2 options, either to create a compliance plan or to withhold funds from the provider. If the department chooses the second option, it is required to notify the provider in writing about withholding of funds and provide detailed calculations. This is effective immediately.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Members, are there any questions on those sections? Rep. Meyer, I think Subdivision 7 is in response to the OLA report. Is that correct? Is that?
Yes,
it is.
Want
to speak to that? I think that's important to get that on the record.
Well, I think
why we're doing that.
Madam Chair, we did want to address the issues from the legislative auditors. There was concern about not being specific of when the application process was to be accomplished in that whole situation. So lines 6.33 through 7.3 were added. And also, based on the legislative auditor, we changed lines 7.23 and to 7.25 on page R7 to be more of what is reality and to be consistent with the information that is in previously in Section 7. The department does not certify online learning courses and programs. It just certifies or approves the providers themselves. And that would be lines 7.23 through 7.25.
Thank you. Members, are there any other questions about those sections?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, how does this interact with our charter school authorizers, where you might have this method of online courses? Are they going to have to go through and actually be approved by the department? Because that's not necessarily the case. No, the authorizers approve charter schools, and the authorizers are the ones that are approved by the department. So will the schools, are they affected by this, or is that a separate category?
Rep. Myra.
Madam Chair, my understanding is that if it's a charter school and it's giving courses, digital learning courses, to its own students, then it would not need to be approved as an online learning provider. But if it is an online learning provider, then it would need to go through that approval process, that application process with the department.
Providing outside of their
students. Representative Olson.
Yeah.
Senator Olson, excuse me. Any other questions on that particular section? Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Olson. I believe that is very consistent with any public school that's offering online learning opportunities to students outside of their district.
Okay, seeing no further questions on that, Ms. Butler, if you could start on R7 with the Senate bill, please.
Sure. Madam Chair, members, then that takes us to Section 1 of the Senate file, where the new language is actually on page R8, and the Senate gave some additional tasks to the Online Learning Advisory Council. They're now directed to oversee the development and maintenance of a catalog of publicly available digital learning content, and to conduct a study to examine ways to include students' performance data into those onto the digital content that's part of the catalog.
Go ahead.
Okay. Then I'm just going to go to the next section, Madam Chair and members, if that's okay. Then it's Section 2 of the Senate file, which compares with Section 8 of the House file, and that allows for basic skills revenue to be used, among many other things, but to include digital learning in unacceptable use. And then, Madam Chair and members, Section 4 of the Senate file is a report from the Online Learning Advisory Council, and the report needs to include an examination of the laws and rules pertaining to classroom learning and determine if any of those inhibit digital learning. In addition, the council needs to review the effective student-teacher ratios and teacher licensure requirements on digital learning. And then it's also directing the Department of Education to provide assistance to the Online Learning Advisory Council for the review and report.
Thank you, Ms. Butler. So we have several different provisions in each bills, and I just want to, one thing I'll mention on the final section, Section 4, some of you may think this sounds familiar. This was something that was part of the online learning, a literal new world of possibilities for Minnesota K-12 education, and I'm not sure if the House Education Committee got those or not, but we'd certainly be glad to pass those out if not. Okay, great. Are there any further questions about the language in either the Senate bill or the House bill, or would you like any more information on any of those provisions, members? Senator Stump?
Yes, I just want to go back to R1, and I know this on the House side, the 2.1 to 2.5, do we know, are there any school districts that do not use some sort of class that would fall under the digital learning? It seems like most districts would have at least offering some courses or programs. It looks like as you read that we're putting it into the statutes where we have requirements for graduation standards, and I know we have some other things we're trying to adjust in that statute, because we're locking up so many things that students have to do.
Ms. Butler, for those of us that don't have all of our statutes memorized, could you tell us, is 124D.0095 that requirement for graduation?
Online learning.
Madam Chair, members, that's the statutory reference for the online learning program.
Okay.
But the new language is in section 120B.024, which is the graduation requirements course credits.
Oh, I see. Okay, yes.
Yep.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Any further comments or questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Biskins.
Very quickly, Madam Chair, and I'm going to go back to R1. On the Senate file, is there any mechanism by which the legislature and the state of Minnesota can assure compliance with that statement? I know you're using the word strongly encourage, but in that section, you know, they could just say, well, no, we don't want to. Is there any then, and I understand the carrot, I really do, as a school administrator, I prefer the carrot, but sometimes the stick is helpful too, all right? Is there a stick behind this, or can they just say, no, we don't want to?
Oh, that's a good question, Representative Biskins. Well, there's many places in law where we do strongly encourage, and according with our Senate language, that's what we are doing, strongly encouraging. However, the difference beyond whether it's strongly encourage or mandate, I think those are two important differences that you have noted. There's also a difference between what is being strongly encouraged on the Senate side, which is online learning, and what is being mandated on the House side, which is digital learning. So we actually have a couple different variables there that we really need to look at. On strongly encourage, my experience with school districts and as a former educator is that school districts do take great heed when the state government says strongly encourage. You might think about our required days of attendance. I think you and I served in the House Education Committee when there was some concern about the fact that every district has a certain number of days of attendance. And that was because, quite frankly, the legislature strongly encouraged that a certain number of days be in our school calendars. And some districts moved ahead with it, and some did not. Now, we're not sure why some districts didn't move ahead with that. Maybe there were objections that they couldn't overcome or barriers they couldn't overcome. But I only throw that example out there to provide the example that the legislature often does strongly encourage. And I do think our districts tend to comply when they can. I guess the other point I would say is that digital learning is revolutionizing our society, just like digital music has, digital movies, digital books. So whether we embrace digital learning or whether we come kicking or screaming, the digital revolution is truly changing our society in many ways, and learning and education is no exception. Any other discussion? Questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there was there any information gathered as you were working and developing this that indicates how many schools might already be offering having digital learning as part of their, I don't know, just what does the Northwest Angle do up there, Senator Stumpf? Do they go all the way through high school?
No.
That's elementary. So meeting
Chair.
That requirement.
Senator Olson.
Let's see. This is. Now, you haven't. It's a graduation requirement. It doesn't say when it would have to be taken. But are all of our districts wired or have the capacity to use online things now?
Senator Stumpf.
Do you know the answer to that one? Or does someone? Or
Madam Chair, I think they do, because I would assume that there's reporting that they have to do, which is at least they should be wired up. That was part of, that goes way back into the mid-90s when we actually did that. And what at that time we were trying to encourage the not only the school districts but the libraries and the all the colleges and universities, and it was a way to try to share resources and maximize the state's investment, whether it's in those resources or actual delivery of educational programs. I think the problem I was trying to relay is that if we lock in something that's mandated, like the problem that we've been trying to wrestle with certain courses, we end up, now this doesn't say a particular course, it could be any course, I suppose, so there is a difference there. But it seems like we take that discretion away from our local districts, and it's something that I sure had a revelation this year when we started talking about the career and technical programs. And also the upcoming Algebra 2 course, which is going to be mandated in 2014. So, and all of them are very important, but I think the challenge for the legislature and is going to be how do we allow some variability out there, which we hope each individual district will make good decisions. That's why, I think the actual best outcome would be to have good people at the local district make decisions versus us at the legislature say, okay, you got to take this, 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 and this. Well, when we did that in Profiles of Learning, you go around and visit the schools, and the students would come up to you and say, well, I got to take this, 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 and this, but I really want to go down this track, and that prevents me from doing that. So we backed off of that. So, I there are two different things, but I think that's kind of the feeling I get when I see an additional mandate.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, if all of our schools are wired and have been for some time, by this time the kids will have taught the adults how to use this stuff. And I think that it almost seems unnecessary to require it, because it becomes a tool that I think is being rapidly discovered that has some value in the delivery, and it may be cases where, especially in our rural areas, they may cooperate with neighboring districts where they might have a hard time getting a licensed teacher in a given area, and will work with, whether it's interactive or what other kinds of things, will be delivering courses in it. I wonder how, that's why I'm kind of curious how many schools are delivering some of their coursework, if not in a complete course, in I think digital, you've said is, well, at least one course credit that includes digital learning. So that could be, if digital learning techniques are used as a part of teaching any class, that would meet that requirement. So is it really necessary?
Madam Chair.
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, in answer to that question, actually this requirement helps the adults get on board. A lot of the students are on board. But we need to really, to be able to effectively teach our students, the teachers need to be on board. The administration needs to be on board. And in answer to one of your comments, this is This is very, very flexible. There are many courses that are required, and if you look up just a few lines, there's a 4 credits of language arts, 3 credits of math, and 3 credits of science and social study. It's art. But how often do we use those courses in our everyday life? Well, we are using digital technology every day, and not just in minutes. We're using it in hours. We really need to prepare our students for their careers, for their college, and it's very flexible. Any one of those courses that are listed there as already required, those are mandated, there would be a digital component that that it would be taught. So it's not different from the Senate version. The House version does not require an extra course, another course. It requires that the courses that are already mandated, that there would be a digital component. And as you said, you know, since the 90s, our schools have been wired. And more recently, ARRA awarded Minnesota $238 million for broadband capacity. So there has been a lot of investment in this area, and the question is, okay, how are we using it? And are we really getting those adults on board? Or are they still locked in the old thought, you know, hand in all your technology, we're going to learn now. No, you know, are we engaging our students? Are the teachers getting involved in meeting this requirement? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I'm looking for, do the schools have to report to the department how they're using the digital learning in the classes? So that is the department having to collect that information from every school to determine that they meet that requirement? Because you've got it in the graduation requirements and course credits. Someplace that would have to show up, because it isn't exactly the same format as what the rest of that section is. So, I mean, it wouldn't necessarily show up as a part of a transcript or a report card. How will you know if it's mandated that a school is, in fact, doing it?
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, it is a requirement, and it would be left up to the school district to how they are implementing it. A particular school district that may have certain capacity or certain available staff may tailor their particular digital learning in a certain fashion. And as far as reporting goes, it would be reported in the similar fashion as all the other credits. But it doesn't specifically say that in statute here that there would be another report filled out. Though schools are required to fill out a technology report and report that to the Department of Education already.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Senator Olson's question. I think as I read through this, it seemed to me that it just has to be something a school, if audited, would be able to demonstrate, right? If audited by the department. Department said, this is a requirement. Are you doing it? You know, show us some examples, verification. So it's not a mandated reporting component, but it is something school districts would have to collect and keep record of under the auditing process.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. I wanted to just touch base on one of the comments also that Representative Myra made, which is the importance of getting adults on board, which often I'm certainly probably not alone in asking my young 20-year-old sons to occasionally help me with some of the digital challenges and technology challenges that I want to try. And so I think that's really important, and I believe the House language does a very nice job of that. In their second provision, which is the technology strategies on page R2, and also on R3, where it talks about effective staff development activity. I'm going to recess to the call of the chair. The Senate, we have a roll call vote, members. I know that we are needed up there for that particular vote. And also, Representative Myra and I have a meeting with the governor at 3:30 today. So we'll recess until the call of the chair. I assume it will be after our meeting with the governor today.
Thank you.
In recess.
Good job.